Good morning. May it please the Court. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
You have whatever time is left on the clock when you stop talking.
Thank you. Mr. Leon Paz's prior order removal, whether seen by the facts as shown by in our briefs or as seen by the government's facts, which are a more constricted set of facts, whichever way you look at them, they do not comport with due process, and for that reason, the government should not be allowed to use that in the criminal prosecution for illegal reentry against Mr. Leon Paz.
Well, may I ask you some clarifying questions, and then I have sort of an overall question. I want to be sure I understand the theory, because I'm not sure I do. If I understand your theory correctly, it is that you're entitled to get out of your waiver of appeal because the IJ did not advise Leon Paz that he was eligible for 212C relief. And that was wrong because the IJ was impermissibly applying IRIA to his 1995 burglary conviction retroactively.
Correct. And so it was not a knowing, intelligent, and voluntary waiver.
Okay, so that violated due process. But we, under our law, we know he was not actually eligible for deportation at all on account of the 1995, October 1995 burglary conviction.
If that was the only offense at the time, correct.
And he was not eligible for 212C relief on that account.
Correct.
Okay. So, what you want us to do is to hold that even though nothing in the record before the IJ suggests it at all, nevertheless, he could reasonably have expected his plea to the October 1985 offense to have made him both deportable and eligible for 212C release, because he knew, although nobody else did, he knew that he had also been convicted of burglary a few months before, and that was a crime of moral turpitude under the law at the time. Is that correct?
Well, Your Honor, depending on how you look at it, I know in the notice to appear, the only information given by the government to the immigration judge was the 95 conviction for burglary.
As far as I can tell, there's nothing in the record, and it may not make a difference, I just want to be sure I understand. There's nothing in the record about the prior 1995 burglary conviction.
Correct. And I think, Your Honor, the argument is that an immigration judge, seeing that the conviction happened before ADPA or IRA was passed, would see, then the settled expectations are no immigration consequences.
That's true, but the IJ only saw the October 1985 conviction.
Correct.
All right. So he would have known, had he been prescient and realized that St. Cyr would come down, he would have known that the guy wasn't deportable, period.
And, Your Honor,
correct?
Yes, except to the
But that would have been the correct result of that immigration proceeding, right? He was not deportable, period.
Under the notice to appear.
And he didn't speak up and say, wait a minute, I am deportable, actually, but I'm deportable for a reason that you don't, that the government didn't charge me with. I'm actually deportable because I had two burglary convictions, not just one, and I'm therefore eligible for 212C relief.
As to the correct set of facts that at the time, yes.
And so your position is that now, one step removed from a straight-up view, we go back and say, okay, in his mind, it was reasonably, objectively possible for him to have expected when he pled guilty to burglary in October that he knew he had two burglary convictions. So if he was ever charged with being deportable, he knew he was deportable, but that he had the possibility of a 212C relief, right?
And
okay. Is that correct?
Yes, there are several expectations.
Would you tell me your best case for the proposition that at this point we go back and make that determination?
The determination as to?
That your waiver was not voluntary. Even though your client knew he was deportable and didn't say anything about it, and that the underlying conviction, therefore, goes underlying, excuse me, order of deportation goes away.
Your Honor, when Mr. Leon Paz went to the immigration judge at the hearing, he was advised by the judge that he had no relief available.
I know, and he wasn't even deportable, right?
And under the notice to appear, if you just look at that one case, he would not be deportable.
Yes.
Although, well, IRA did something interesting because the aggravated felony definition is retroactive. So I guess IRA would have made him deportable, but would have kept 212C eligibility for him. And I think our...
That's a change. So you're now saying that 1985 burglary conviction actually did make him deportable and it wasn't retroactively impermissible to have said he was deportable.
Yeah, I guess I'm... under the facts of the government.
Part of the law or the whole law? That's the problem.
Well, IRA made retroactive the definition of aggravated felony. And that was clear in the language of the statute. And so the judge has to apply that retroactively. The immigration judge has to. But the section getting rid of 212C was not retroactive. And based on that, that would still be available, even though, like I said, it's kind of strange because one section of the law is retroactive and now made him deportable.
Well,
but with 212C relief. And this, again, is just a response to the government's argument. Going
well, I just want your theory. It's what I want because it's confusing. All right. Then I have a completely different question. Assuming that we now understand what your theory is, do you have to show prejudice or not?
Your Honor, I think Mr. Leon Paz has to show prejudice, but based on the fact that it's a 212C waiver, as opposed to a 212H waiver, in immigration law, a 212C waiver is much easier to get than a 212H. A 212H requires a showing of extreme hardship. A 212C is most like it's discretion. So it's a weighing of facts. And for that reason, I think we made a proffer to the district court with all the facts that would show that Mr. Leon Paz would be someone who would be able to get a 212C. And St. Cyr has statistics that say 51.5% of people who applied between 89 and 95 for this waiver received it, over 10,000 aliens. And that was when the definition of aggravated felony, people who were deportable for offenses, was much smaller, meaning they had usually worse crimes than they would have now. Most likely offenses that are against a person, unlike the property offenses that Mr. Leon Paz had. I would say that I don't think the court necessarily...
Can I ask you one question? Not too much time left, but I just quickly. Forgetting the prior burglaries, and let's just concentrate on the one at hand. I take it, as it turns out, he was misadvised regarding the one at hand even. Was he not?
Yeah, he was misadvised.
I take it that's one of your points. And forgetting your other point, but even on the one at hand, he's misadvised. Is that true?
Yes, sir.
All right.
And I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Okay, thank you. Will you from the government?
May it please the Court. My name is Bruce Ferg. I'm Assistant United States Attorney here on behalf of the government. I think that the crucial question is essentially what Judge Reimer has focused on, and that is what was the defendant's reasonable expectation or reasonable understanding of the law at the time that he pled guilty to that first-degree burglary in 1995.
Well, if he had in his head that he had a whole string of convictions which made him deportable, which his 1985 plea did not, But if he ever were charged with being deportable, he could have expected 212C relief eligibility. I guess that's his argument.
Well, I think that just the way that you've expressed the question shows the problem with it, and that is that this is all purely hypothetical. What if they come around sometime later and change the law and put me in a different situation than I'm actually in now? As for the question of whether he was actually deportable, because of the conjunction of the two burglaries that could be described as crimes of moral turpitude, we're not even sure that that's true. There are certain qualifications to the CMT classification, including whether or not, for example, the two offenses were actually committed as part of one ongoing scheme. And because this was never raised until an objection to the magistrate's report, we have not had an opportunity to fully examine those facts or to argue them, which is really why this whole theory ought to be considered waived.
Well, what about the second one taken by itself?
The one of the first degree.
The one that he was actually charged with.
Right. So far as I can tell.
By itself, and when he pleads, he knows two things. He knows, one, I'm not an aggravated felon.
Exactly.
And two, if I am an aggravated felon, I'm entitled to 212 relief. That's what he knows at the time. Correct?
That's right.
Okay. So.
Again.
So what happens by the time. So it turns out, lo and behold, they seek to remove him on the basis of that felony. And they say, we've got you in a double whammy. A. We've made you an aggravated felon. And B, we've taken away 212 relief, right?
That's correct.
Why isn't that very much like St. Cyr?
Because the situation, again, that St. Cyr was talking about was, what did the person know, or what were his reasonable expectations? What rights had vested at the time of the change of plea? What did he understand at that time? And at that time, the law said, you are not an aggravated felon. You only are being imposed a four-year term, so you're not an aggravated felon.
But he's really sophisticated, and he knows that the government is always playing fun and games with who an aggravated felon is. Okay? He knows that they're always flipping things around, as indeed they are and did. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Correct.
So he says to himself, well, they may decide that this is an aggravated felony. But that doesn't matter, because I have 212 relief anyway. Because if it's an aggravated felony, it's not the kind that 212 zaps me on, because it's only a four-year aggravated felony and not a five-year. He says that to himself, because he's very sophisticated. Just like St. Cyr was very sophisticated and said to himself, well, you know.
No, the difference, there was a significant difference. And that difference between this kind of a situation and St. Cyr is exactly what this Court dealt with in Velasco Medina.
Not quite exactly of it.
There were additional factors in Velasco Medina. He had additional notice because of the timing of his change of plea. But the first holding.
He had already lost 212 relief under Velasco. He had already lost 212 relief if he was an aggravated felon. Correct?
But that was a secondary holding. The first thing that this Court said, and I'm quoting from page.
I know what it said first, but it held two things. And I can be corrected on my understanding, but I don't think I can call either of those dicta and unimportant. Each one was a pillar on which it stood.
I would suggest that they are actually two independent grounds, each sufficient, because there was the additional notice that Mr. Velasco Medina had because his conviction occurred after AEDPA was passed in 96, whereas our defendant was in 95. But the initial statement, and this is very flat, is that Velasco Medina was never eligible for discretionary relief under 212C because his guilty plea did not render him deportable, and therefore, unlike St. Cyr, he never possessed vested rights acquired under existing law. That's the sum of my position right here. This is exactly Velasco Medina. He was not deportable.
Some of your position is on Velasco Medina is to not consider its the second part of it. If that's wrong, if that needs to be considered, then what?
I guess I'm not following what you mean when you say it has to be considered. It was a factually distinct situation. And he, you know, Velasco Medina was a year later, so AEDPA did apply. This is a year earlier, so it didn't apply. And that's why I'm saying that that prong simply
that isn't the problem anyway.
Not really, no. Because
that doesn't make any difference.
No.
The only real distinction, I mean, the fact that Velasco was sandwiched between the two is kind of an irrelevance as far as this is concerned.
I believe so, yes. So, again, the bottom line is, what do we mean in understandable terms about a vested right? Our defendant could not have had a vested right in relief, which is purely contingent upon the possibility that the government might change the rules somewhere down the line. That's not what St. Cyr says. St. Cyr says that he had a vested right because of his expectations at the time that he changed his plea, and then the government came around later, changed the rules, and tried to apply that retroactively. That's not this case. So, and again, I would really like to emphasize that I don't think that this whole other theory is even appropriately before the court, because it was never suggested that the potential crimes of moral turpitude deportability was even in the case until it was raised in the objection to the magistrate's order. So the government was not in a situation where it could address that, find out factually whether that was even an applicable kind of approach. The district court immediately adopted the magistrate's recommendations and did not request any kind of response, so we don't know whether he did it based on the fact that he simply agreed with the merits of the magistrate's finding and thought that the crimes of moral turpitude theory was irrelevant, or because it was raised lately. An objection is not a place to inject a whole new theory of the case. It's to talk about, well, Judge, you mistook this fact that was in the record already, or this theory that we argued, but it's not an occasion to raise something entirely new. And then on top of that, you double the waiver by the fact that it was not even meaningfully presented in the brief. It was alluded to as kind of an historical fact in the statement of the case, but there was no meaningful argument of this, well, he should have been told about this crime of moral turpitude, which only he knew about. That was never meaningfully argued.
It was an evolving theory.
I'm sorry?
It was an evolving theory.
Well, perhaps. But there has to be some point at which you are bound to the theory that you were presenting. And his theory throughout the case was simply, I should have been told about this hypothetical possibility that somewhere down the line somebody might change something and then I might
Well, let's say he had been told that. What could he have done about it?
Well, again, it's purely hypothetical. If he had been told...
Let's say the IJ had been particularly canny and had said all the things we can now put in his mouth to have said.
Mm-hmm.
And the future would have been laid bare to the petitioner here, or the appellant. What could he have done if he had known more, or suspected more? There he is. He's just been ordered removed, right? And what?
Well, presumably, if he'd been told that, he would have then made a judgment about whether or not he wanted to attempt to pursue that relief.
Which
and,
relief? The
212C relief based on this new theory of crimes of moral turpitude, and the IJ would then presumably not have told him that there was no grounds.
He so could have pursued the relief.
I'm sorry?
He could have pursued the relief as to the one burglary for which he was being removed. I guess you can always file a petition. There's no prohibition against it.
That's, yeah. In theory, the mechanism is there, but whether he would have made that choice, and again, whether there were even exactly
well,
facts to support
it. Let's assume he had done everything he now wishes he had done,
mm-hmm.
and he had been told everything he now claims he should have been told. How would it have played out?
The IJ, I guess, would have said, under this theory, there is potentially a 50-50 chance that you'll get relief, and therefore he would have had to make a judgment whether it was plausible for him to do that or if whether he's just going to cash in and waive his appeal as he did. If that's the difficulty with this theory is that we are asked to grant relief on a whole set of hypothetical what-ifs, you know, if this had been done and if this had been done. But the bottom line is that he was not deportable, and so Velasco Medina says he had no right to expect to be informed that there was 212C relief, and so the IJ did exactly what he was supposed to have done. Told him, under the only theory that is in front of me, the only basis for your deportation, which was set out in the notice of appearance, this is what your options are. And he did it exactly right.
Okay, thank you. So tell me, if everything had happened the way, you know, say it should have happened, what could or would the IG have said, and what could or would your client have done?
Well, Your Honor, if Mr. Leon Paz had been advised, and I guess at the time he advised all that immigration judge might have given is something along the lines of the law is unsettled, you may apply for this, I may pretermit your application, and you can appeal me to the BIA.
I'm sorry?
You may appeal me to the BIA. Judges may, could very well say the law on this is unsettled as to whether you get 212C. You can go ahead and apply for it. I'm going to rule against you, but you have that issue.
But remember, at that point, the only thing the IJ knows about is the one burglary, right?
Correct.
Would your client have had to say, oh, by the way, Judge, you should know that I'm also guilty of these other things?
If it was just in that one, I'm sorry.
I'm just wondering how.
If it was just in the one burglary, again, it's the argument in my reply brief, basically, that he was not then deportable at the time that he entered his guilty plea. Then it would be a motion to terminate proceedings based on the fact that the person is not an alien who can be removed from the country. And again, the same process would work through. I assume the judge would say this may be something that may work. I'm going to rule against it right now because I think that the statute is retroactive, but you now have an issue to take to the Board of Immigration Appeals, or your attorney has an issue to take to the Board of Immigration Appeals. And just briefly, Your Honor,
What would have happened then?
The Board of Immigration Appeals, you know, well, then he would have made a, Mr. Leon Paz could have made a knowing, intelligent, voluntary decision as to whether to waive or to appeal.
I understand. And let's say he had made the other decision. He had said, okay, well, futile though it be, I apply.
So if he applies.
And the IJ says, okay, denied. Keep talking.
Okay, it goes to the BIA. The BIA would deny his application.
After they stop laughing. They...
And then under Randhawa v. Ashcroft, he doesn't have the right to appeal to the Ninth Circuit.
He what?
He would not have a right to appeal from that, from the BIA's decision.
Okay, so he'd be back. He'd still be in the same pickle. I'm trying to figure out. Your entire claim hinges on the fact that he was not informed and therefore he gave up rights that he otherwise could have exercised. And I'm trying to figure out, okay, let's say everything was done well, where would he now be? What would that have netted him?
Well, depending on when the BIA ruled on his case, I guess Sincere could have come down before and then he would have received a remand. If he had been before, the BIA would have probably ruled against them, and then...
But that's the question, isn't it? The question is whether this is covered by Saint Cyr.
You mean this case?
Yes.
Right. This case is. What I mean is, if his immigration case had continued, the BIA may not have ruled on it until 2001.
I see. And when did Saint Cyr come down?
2001. June of 2001.
And when was the hearing before the IJ?
October of 97.
I don't know how the BIA was running those days, but that sounds...
Well, he was in custody at the time and serving a state prison sentence. I don't know if he would have been able to make bond and be released, and if he was out of custody, then the BIA could take a lot longer to decide this case. So I really couldn't tell you when they would have decided, because I don't know if he would have been able to make an INS bond and be released to his family here. If he had not made bond, then the case would have gone a lot quicker and probably been done in about a year. But if he had made bond and been out of custody, that would be a different story, and the case can drag on for a long time. And, Your Honor, just briefly on the submission about the report and recommendation, which is the first time that I raised the two crimes of moral turpitude, and that happened because no one had mentioned that issue before, neither the government nor myself. It was something that the magistrate picked up on, decided to rule on that basis. And so my only avenue to answer to that was through my objections to the R&R. Excuse me.
I think you're out of time.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Case is argued. 10 submitted.